right. Thanks for joining us for another episode of Divorce Confidential. My name is Michelle Delino, and I'm here with my co-host, Amy Alpeza with Windermere Real Estate. I am a divorce and family law attorney. I've been practicing family law for 15 years. My firm has offices in Seattle and Bellevue, and we handle literally every type of family law issue from the craziest things you've heard of to the most collaborative settlements. So we're pretty much all over the map. And Amy is a certified real estate divorce specialist. She is the go-to person that you need if you have a real estate issue in your divorce, and everyone does. So I'm going to turn it over to Amy. We have a special guest here today. I'm going to let her kick us off.
Yeah, thank you, Michelle, and welcome, everybody. I'm so excited today. We have a special guest, Brian Evans with Madrona Financial Services. And Brian is a CPA. He's also a PFS, which is a personal financial specialist of Madrona Financial and Bauer Evans. They are a well-known registered investment advisory practice and accounting firm based out of Seattle, Washington. Brian serves as the chief executive officer, lead wealth planner, and senior portfolio manager. Brian also hosts a weekly radio show and podcast, which I'm sure some of you have heard, Growing Your Wealth. It is in Washington on Cairo KVI and several other radio networks. He also hosts his show in Utah. And he is a nationally published author and has been a regular guest on New Day Northwest, CNBC, and Fox Television, and has been honored to ring the bell at the New York Stock Exchange. So welcome, Brian. We are so excited to have you.
Thanks. Glad to be
cool
here.
Stuff. Wow.
Well, that was a pretty interesting month of my life. I turned 50. I rang the bell to open the New York Stock Exchange. I went on national TV for the first time and earned my Taekwondo black belt all in 30 days.
Whoa.
So kind of a big 30-day time
well,
period.
Before we get into the financial stuff, what was the best thing that you did that month? What was a highlight? Because that sounds pretty epic, all of that. What was the biggest thing?
Well, gosh, that's a tough one. The hardest thing was Taekwondo black belt. The easiest thing was ringing the bell, but that was, that's the once in a lifetime opportunity that a lot of people don't obviously get a chance to. I thought I'd be ringing a bell. You actually just push a button for 45 seconds. You have a little timer. So you push it and then you clap for, they tell you exactly what to do. But that was pretty cool because they took us to the back, the big boardrooms and the behind the scenes stuff. And it was kind of a big deal. And I don't spend a lot of time in New York City, and to go there and do that was pretty special.
Very cool. That's awesome.
Fabulous.
So we're coming up on tax season, and I think we have a lot of people going through divorce and just otherwise other people out there that really taxes, or a lot of people avoid their taxes to the last minute, or they, I don't know. I feel like in my experience, and you can tell me what you think, people fall into two camps. They know they're getting money back, so they do it like as soon as possible to get the money, or in more complex financial situations, which is most of my clients, there's questions about what their liability is going to be. They may need an extension. They may have, real estate considerations for transactions they've had in the last year. Maybe they've done a 1031 exchange. Maybe they didn't do it right. Like, there's all kinds of different issues. And I find that a lot of my clients put off tax planning, or they don't know where to start, or they're kind of like, what are the things I should know when I'm thinking about it? Do I work with a professional? Do I go TurboTax? So what I'm wondering is, you've got a ton of experience with financial planning and with tax. Where do people start? What are some highlights and tips that you would give when people even just start thinking about taxes? Because I think it can be really overwhelming and stressful.
Yeah. Well, if you're doing your tax planning while you're doing your tax return, you're too late.
Thank you. Good. Yeah, I agree.
That ship has sailed. You can't retroactively do tax planning, unfortunately. So I don't really think of tax season as my tax planning season. Tax season for me as a financial advisor who's also a CPA really is year-round, and most of it's done primarily in the fourth quarter of the year, honestly, because that's where you do a lot of like Roth conversion calculations, or maybe you're just thinking about the upcoming year. You still have time to do things. What's interesting about taxes, people are like, okay, Brian, I'm going to hire your CPA firm. Get me out of taxes. I'm like, well, that That's not the goal. I mean, the goal is to pay the least amount of taxes on the income you're going to earn, not to not pay taxes. I can tell you how to not pay taxes. Just send me all your money as a fee, write it off, and yeah, don't make any money. You know, that's not the goal here. And so it's about, paying the least amount of taxes over a longer period of time and not volunteering unnecessary taxes just because you didn't understand some of the laws.
I think that's great. And I think what you said too really nailed it, that if you're doing your tax planning when you're doing your return, it's too late, right? When you think about somebody who has been doing that and wanting to get ahead for the next year, and like you said, really thinking about what that really means, where do you think people should start? Like if they're thinking, hey, I'm scrambling to the finish line this year. Obviously, I didn't plan ahead to deal with my tax liability or minimize what my liability is going to be on my income. What do they do next year? Do they get in touch with a financial planner or CPA earlier and kind of start to think about how to deal with their own individual financial picture? What do they do?
Well, for me, it kind of starts with a financial plan for me because a financial plan is a lifetime kind of thing. And I look at tax planning as a lifetime. Not only is it next year, it might be stuff that might happen over the next 10 years. It might be a legacy kind of thing, estate planning, gifting while you're alive, estate planning with legacy when you pass, taking care of your loved ones, whatever. And so it's really it's a multi-year thing, and I kind of need to see the big picture to do the best tax planning. And I break tax planning into two areas too. A lot of people are like, "Well, I make a lot of money. How do I get out of taxes?" You don't. Okay, so when you earn money, you don't get to defer that. You don't get to do tax deferred exchanges. You don't have a step up in basis on wages. You know, all the tax planning tools that we have available to us. They aren't available on that. I call it the first tier, the earning of money. So earn as much as you can. You'll pay your tax at your rate, and but then it's different. Then when you get that money, you've paid the tax, you've earned it. Now you're investing it. You might invest in your business. You might invest in real estate, rental real estate, principal residence. Different rules there. You might have appreciation in stocks. You might put money into Roths or qualified accounts. There's many different places where you can put money, and then you have options. It's that second tier, the investment side of things, what you do with the money after you've earned it, that where the real opportunities lie, whether it's deferral or elimination. And you know that's another area of taxation. There's tax minimization, which is trying to get the lowest average bracket. Okay. It's not tax avoidance, it's minimization through planning your income because you get to choose when you sell investments. So you get to choose the timing, whereas you don't choose the timing when you earn wages. Sometimes it's tax deferral, but that just says you're putting it off. But sometimes tax deferral can lead to tax exemption through step up in basis or different methods there. And so using, whether it's trying to make something tax free, tax deferred, lower taxable brackets, these are all things we can look at when we have a longer time frame to work with. And that's why I think it starts with a financial plan, which are really nice to do because then it kind of tells you what your finances look at over your lifetime, how much you can spend, what you're going to leave in legacy assets, the best of our ability to predict these kinds of things. And then that affords you the opportunity to say, all right, let's say you own some real estate and you're 70 years old, and you go, well, I don't mind being a landlord today, but 5 years, I don't want to be a landlord, or 10 years. What's my plan? What's my exit strategy? I own a business. What's my exit strategy? I'm going to move my house to, I'm going to move to another state. What's my exit strategy? So, those are the kind of things we can take into account when we're looking at a lifelong financial plan.
That's great. Amy, I have a question for you, and this kind of, and I'm interested in what Brian thinks. Like, what about using you? I mean, you have short-term rentals. I have one now. Short-term rentals as far as it relates to, tax, are short-term rentals, in your experience, and Brian, what do you think? Like, is that something, is that a tool that people can use to deal with reducing taxable income? I mean, you're making income, but I know there's special things that apply to short-term rentals. Have you seen an increase in people getting short-term rentals and having that as part of their financial plan and tax strategy, one or the other? I guess I'm wondering for both of you, because I know Amy has experience personally, and Brian, you're going to know professionally.
Yeah, I mean, I would say for me personally, and also from a tax perspective, owning, we have two short-term rentals in Arizona. Some of you may already know that. Those have been very beneficial for reducing my taxes. And I don't know if part of it, I think part of it is because I am a licensed real estate broker, and so I get that professional deduction, and I'm not sure if I'm explaining that properly. So Brian, I'd love to hear your take on that. But I'm not seeing a ton of people in my market here in Washington get into short-term rentals. The biggest reason I think is because housing costs here are so high that it doesn't make sense to buy, $1 million or a $1.5 million home and then rent it out short term, right? So we don't see as much of that here. And we also have different laws in Washington State. I know in Seattle, you can only have a maximum of two short term rentals, and one of them has to be your primary residence. So there is some limiting factors where other states like Arizona, you can have an unlimited amount of short term rentals, as long as you're paying your licenses and your taxes. Yeah, so I don't see that. I see more long-term rentals here in Washington State. But what about you, Brian? What are you seeing as far as short-term versus long-term real estate as part of a client's overall wealth picture?
Yeah, my head exploded with ideas just when you brought up the topic. I mean, yeah, you nailed it on the short-term rentals. They don't pencil in Washington. They're not financially sound. So I see a lot more second home, vacation home kind of things. And then there's lots of rules around that. The planning you can do. Let's say you have a place where you visit quite a bit. I might suggest that you, if you're planning on selling it and you have a big gain on it, that you don't visit it for 2 years for more than 15 days in a year so that you can convert to an investment property instead of a personal use property. Once it's an investment property, you can sell it using 1031 exchange. If you do a 1031 exchange, you can do, if you don't want to be a landlord anymore, do a Delaware statutory trust into passive real estate. And eventually you can have, when you pass away, give it, leave it to your spouse or your heirs. All of your gains on your vacation property have become permanently tax-free forever, and you never pay any tax. So you can see my head just sort of rolling out ideas on what that looks like. But yeah, they don't typically pencil out here. Another big thing is the age thing. So Amy, if I'm talking to someone like yourself, you're in the, I call it the get rich stage of life. You're building your real estate portfolio and doing all that. In 40 years, if we have this conversation, now you're in the stay rich stage of life, and we're having a different conversation. You don't want to be building wealth. You've already done that. You want to keep your wealth, save on your taxes, make good decisions, and make decisions that take less time and energy out of your life so you can live the life you want to live. So again, even the timing in your life as to answering a question like that depends on where you're at in life, and that has to do with the financial plan I mentioned. So lots of implications with anything. You think, well, I was just talking about Airbnb. Why'd you make it so complicated, Brian? You're talking about step up in basis and Delaware statutory. What are you talking about? Well, you don't have to know all this stuff, but it's nice to know there's an inventory on. I've got a big old computer library going on in my head where all this stuff's just sitting there ready to access. And so it's fun to kind of talk through those scenarios.
I think it means that, like, there are so many options. It means that people that are listening need to talk to somebody that knows, because I mean, even like for me, I don't know. We bought a same thing that Amy said too, and it doesn't pencil out in Washington. So I have a second home in Arizona, and we bought a short-term rental in Arizona because it penciled out there, but it absolutely did not pencil out here. So I think, like, even understanding the benefits of that and understanding, like Brian, like you're saying, if you don't want to be a landlord, what are your options from there? I think anybody listening would benefit from not just making a purchase or doing something because they think it's going to help them without talking to somebody about your overall financial plan. I think that's kind of what we keep coming back to is if you are dealing with taxes and trying to pay the least amount of taxes on the income that you're making, you're not going to pay no tax, like Brian said. You need a financial plan and you need to tax plan and fight and look at your overall plan ahead of time. Same thing if you're thinking about short-term rentals. I don't think anybody should just wade into that without knowing what they're doing, obviously.
Yeah, the rental market, if you're, a lot of people go, I'm going to buy some rentals. And what's your experience in that? Well, none. I'm like, wow. Okay, well, this is a business. You just go into business with no experience and no plan. Well, everybody makes money in real estate. Not everybody.
Not everybody.
So yeah, we have these discussions with folks all the time. What's interesting about that is I'll give you kind of a case study here. I had these people come and they husband and wife, and now we're talking about two different individuals, right? And with two different objectives. And I found out about their rental portfolio. They had a huge portfolio, about $15 million. And I said, well, what's your cash flow on that? And she said, 10% or something like that. And I kind of chuckled myself because I said, you sure about that? Your actual cash flow? Yeah, it's about 10%, eight or 10%. And I'm like, so you put $1.2 million in the bank every year. And they're like, no, we make like 150 grand. I said, well, that sounds like 1%. She goes, well, that's not right. I said, I'm looking at your tax return.
Wow.
It says you make 1%. She said, well, that's not right. I said, did you cheat on your taxes? She goes, no. Well, what am I
That's what
missing here?
you
We
made.
always overestimate because people will look at their rentals and go, well, I paid $1 million for this stuff. I make 100 grand a year. It's 10% return. I'm like, no, your gross rents are 100, your net are 60,000, and that million's worth 10 million now. So really you're making 0.6% net operating income. So part of the analysis I often do is I'll take a Schedule E page one, go to the net profit, add back depreciation, and then divide that by the fair market value. That's all I did with these folks. And I came up with they were actually making 1.2%. And we could do a DST and more than triple their cash flow, and they wouldn't even have to be a landlord anymore, and they'd have a diversified portfolio. And he was like, oh, I want that. She goes, we don't want to sell anything. And he just kind of looked at her like, you're not the one that spent the summer in a basement remodeling a house. I do all the work. Of course you're okay with it. I say, well, you guys might need marriage counseling before we need to talk anymore. But just knowing even what if you are an experienced landlord, knowing what is my net operating income, often it's 0 to 2% of the fair market value because of the appreciation we've had in Puget Sound. So then decisions can be made to do I want to up my cash flow and decrease my involvement? Maybe. So I've done over $200 million of 1031 exchanges into passive real estate for older folks. If you're younger, building your portfolio, let's not do that. We can have the discussion, but I'm going to tell you, don't do it. Keep doing what you're doing. And when you're older, come see my partner, my younger partners who will be working then. I won't be by the time, but have a plan around that and just know that I'm doing what I should be doing. Because often I'm having this conversation with an 80-year-old and they're thinking about retiring someday. I say, well, you might want to think about that now as opposed to waiting
That's a
long.
really good point too, though, like for anybody listening, like it where you're at in your life, it makes a difference
Oh,
on
huge.
what makes sense for you. I mean, number one, from a tax planning perspective, but from an investment perspective more than anything, and what your risk tolerance should be for investing and what, whether a 1031 makes sense for you or not. I think a lot of it's not the same for everybody. If you're talking to somebody at 40, like you said, Brian, that's very different than somebody at 80. Like you're in a totally different spot, and maybe what's best for you is different. I mean, that's the thing I think a lot of people don't think about. It's interesting when I think about that because everybody has the best of intentions, and everybody always wants to tell you what they did or what their brother did or what you should do. It's the same thing with like divorce. Oh, this is what happened in this case. This is what happened with my property. And people mean well, but I think it's just not a universal answer, and everybody's own fact specific situation is different. So that's a good takeaway from this, I think.
Yeah, you're spot on there. Yeah, the age thing makes a huge difference, and how people look at working with Someone like myself, for instance, I've had people come to me, "How are you going to make me rich, Brian?" I'm like, I don't think it's going to work out. You need to get rich on your own." Well, I'm in the stay rich business, not the get rich business.
Right,
You know, I'm helping people maintain or live the life. I call it live the life you want to live. And having more money doesn't necessarily help you live the life you want to live. Too many clients that are at a point in their life where they didn't spend money and they didn't live the life they wanted to live because they thought, if I just had more money, I'd be happier. And, you know, they have 6 million, they need 10. They have 10, they need 15. They have 15, they need 30. The number is never going to make you happy. The analogy I have is tools. If you like to work with tools, you like to have hammers, and you might have five different hammers. Well, what if I gave you 100 hammers? Well, I can only use five. What if I gave you 1,000 hammers? I mean, you just have more of something you're not going to use, and now you have a problem storing it. Well, that's how I see it with a lot of people that, you know, they live their life with a certain lifestyle, and they just have more and more assets, but they don't have a plan for it necessarily. So, it's assets are just a tool. We have to have a certain amount of that tool to live the life we want to live, but we need to focus on on that life. And so the life planning, my latest book, 7 Steps to Successful Retirement, I think there's only one step that involves the investment selection. The other ones are about more life planning and living the life you want to live.
That's great. Can you tell us, before we end, I really would love it if you would tell us, like, what is your who is your ideal client? Like, who do you work with most? Who do you want to work with? And who would be best served by reaching out to you?
Yeah, our stated minimum is $500,000 of investable assets. I typically work with people that have more complex situations. I love complex. I love life decision kind of stuff where planning is going to happen, big events. Maybe it's plan on selling my business or my real estate, or I have an inheritance coming in, or I have, you know, something, or I'm retiring. Or a lot of people come to me because they want to know, can they retire? That financial plan I mentioned is huge. It has saved people years and years of work they didn't need to do. Because often I'll say, "Well, how long are you going to work?" They go, "I don't know, 15 more years." I'm like, "Well, you're already 60. Well, let's do a plan." We do a plan. I go, "You know, you can retire today. Here's the number." And they're like, "Really?" You know, that's a dramatic example, but often we're able to have people have that certainty that they can retire earlier than they thought they were gonna, and that adds years to their fun life, and it's life-changing and can be. Or conversely, they went, "Well, my friends are retiring, I'm gonna retire." I'm like, "Well, here's the plan. Ain't gonna work." And they need to know that too. So doing that is huge. But people with a little complex kinds of things going on are really good fit for us. The more complex, the better. But even if you just have a couple of really important things, you're not sure where to get the best advice, that can be good. But generally, our average client's probably in the $1 to $5 million of investable asset range.
Great. That's really helpful. So hopefully anybody out there, whether it's Brian or someone else, you need to talk to someone. That's the
Yeah.
big takeaway here. You need to talk to someone. Don't
Yeah.
wait. I mean, the sooner I would think, you know, a lot of people I didn't understand until I was into my, mid-30s, the time value of money and the importance of investing earlier. And I don't think it's ever too early. So the sooner that you can figure out what to do with what you have and how to get where you want to be, the better off you are, and you can't do that on your own.
No, and do try to find somebody that's actually trying to understand your situation and not trying to sell your product. Unfortunately, you know, I've done my radio show about 9 years now, and I listen to snippets of other shows and their sales pitches for whatever they're selling often. So find somebody that's going to be a planner, not a salesman. I don't have to sell because, you know, once somebody talks to me for a while, they're going, "Okay, you know a lot of stuff and it could help me. And no matter what I ask you, you seem to have a really good answer." You know, I don't have to sell, so I can be a planner, which I love. That's what I love doing. And try and find somebody that can help you in that respect.
Great.
We are so grateful to have you on today. And I just want to reiterate, you're just a wealth of knowledge and information. And I hope our listeners got some good takeaways today about some tax planning and wealth planning strategies. But if you have any further questions for Brian, feel free to reach out. We will definitely connect you as a resource. And yeah, thanks for being on our show again today.
Yeah, that's
Thanks.
awesome.
Hope you invite me back sometime. I have to chuckle. You asked me, do you want any set questions? I'm like, no, just fire away. That's the fun part for me. So I'm glad we were able to have a nice conversation.
Definitely. Well, we would love to have you
Perfect.
back.
Well,
Absolutely.
and I didn't realize that your new book came out. So I'd love to have you back and talk about your new book
Yeah,
because I think that
definitely.
would be, I mean, you're always interesting to talk to. So we'd love
Thank
that.
you. Yeah,
That'd be
thanks so
great.
much, Brian. And to everybody out there, thanks for joining us. Hope you found this helpful. We'll see you next time.